I am indeed very happy to be here in New Zealand and with all of you who are present this evening. I will not say how much I appreciate the kind words which have been spoken with regard to myself and my work. I do not, of course, accept quite literally everything that has been said in praise of me, but I accept absolutely the genuineness of the sentiments which have been expressed. I have had a very happy time in Auckland as well as in the other places in New Zealand which I have visited. And everywhere I met with audiences which were friendly and sympathetic. It was really a pleasure to speak to them and share with them such understanding as one has with regard to those matters of fundamental importance which we were able to discuss. Now, talking to youth as well as the elder people, one has in some manner to bridge the gulf between youth and age. I think it was Bernard Shaw who said that youth is a wonderful thing, but it is wasted on the young. I do not, of course, agree with him in that statement because I do not think it is wasted on anybody. What he meant was that they do not realize the importance of that period of life and all the possibilities that exist in that condition of youth. We were all young at one time, but we grow older day by day, and the process begins from the earliest period of life. You, I think, really represents a period in which life is new, attractive, and not yet stale, when all things have an aspect that they do not possess later in life. It is a time in which one's nature is in an extremely flexible condition so that it can be molded into one shape or another. Actually, every person who is born undergoes such a molding. When we were young, when we are young, let me say, we have all the same kind of nature. But then one person, after some years, becomes set in one particular mold, and another assumes a different shape of mind. It's not merely a question of temperament. It's a question of the influences which have played upon the individual and to which that individual lends himself. But I wonder whether it is not possible for a human being to retain this, the freshness of youth, the flexibility, the openness of mind, all characteristic of that period until the end of his days. Of course, you might say, produce such an instance, I may not be able to do it. When Dr. Besant was 80 years old, there were naturally celebrations of her work over the very long period of time that she had lived and carried on many a good fight. And she was then described as 80 years young. That was a manner of speaking. It was to indicate that she still had the dynamism, the enthusiasm, and the zest which young people possess. But most people lose all that as the years pass. They become different from what they were. But the question is whether it is not possible, even though one becomes old, to remain young at heart, that is to say, impressionable. Yeah, the possibility of viewing all matters which come up before oneself in a spirit that of a fresh inquiry. What happens is that one meets with a certain idea, and when he first comes across it, he considers it carefully. If he is a thoughtful man, he inquires into its nature and tries to understand it. But then, after some time, he accepts the idea and merely carries it on. So, in course of years, he accumulates a number of ideas on various matters, and he begins to function with those ideas, not with the mind which he originally had, which had a certain freedom and a quality of freshness, but he thinks with the ideas that have already been formed in him, which have become set in his nature. As a matter of fact, in certain instances, the person doesn't think at all. One might describe the functioning of his mind as merely the activity of the ideas that have already firmly taken root there. So his thinking, when it is merely the functioning of a set of ideas, tends to become repetitive and monotonous. And then when he finds that life has this monotony, he tries to some kind of something which will give him a certain excitement, which will give him a sensation of freshness. So he takes to drugs or various other things. But then what happens is he becomes addicted to the sensation that he courts. And this addiction has also the effect of producing a deterioration in his condition. His condition becomes hard and set, and there is no longer the zest of life, no longer the freshness of approach, the early sensitiveness, because on the one hand his mind has been nailed down at various points, and he thinks only with the ideas that are deeply embedded in him. And secondly, this attraction to sensation produces a kind of stickiness in his nature. Of course, this doesn't mean that one should not enjoy life. To enjoy the movements of life is very natural and a healthy thing. But one can enjoy without becoming addicted to particular sensations which have caused the enjoyment. When there is addiction, there is a kind of stickiness of mind and heart. You have experienced something, you stick to it. So the mind gets stuck to certain experiences which are in its memory. And this condition also takes away the freedom which the person originally had. So the whole question is, can we not live with that original state of mind, approaching all questions as if they are new, not getting bogged down in any particular idea, but retaining the capacity to understand it, to examine it? Can we not live life as in the manner of in which a river flows, that is, with a continuous movement, not caught in eddies or whirlpools? I have to talk in terms of a simile because there is no other way of expressing what I say. The body, of course, deteriorates. We cannot help it. The cells of the body have their own life term. They die by the million every minute, perhaps every second. The organs of the body grow old. However carefully one might have lived, however much observing the rules of health, one cannot arrest the process of aging. And eventually the body deteriorates to such an extent that it ceases to be an instrument of use to the indwelling entity. This whole process cannot be prevented. All material organizations are subject to deterioration. We know that from experience. But then the human mind and heart have a nature which is not like that of matter or of a material organization. And it is because of that fact that there is the possibility of remaining young and fresh at heart in spite of the aging and the deterioration of the body. If the nature of the mind and heart were a product of the brain or of the human body, Then, as the body deteriorates, the mind must also deteriorate. But one thing amongst others, which we learn from the study that we call theosophy, is that there is this possibility for every human being, although we may not fully realize it, of remaining within oneself in a fresh condition, free from every element that produces deterioration. That is because the human consciousness, or to put it in simpler words, the nature of one's mind and heart, is not really a product of matter. It has a different nature altogether. Matter and all material organizations have a nature which is an object of knowledge. It is something before you that you can observe. But when you talk of mind and heart, you refer to certain faculties, certain qualities, which are not of that nature. The consciousness of man is has a different nature altogether from that of matter and all organizations composed of matter. Yet it has an extraordinary nature. Although it is not matter, sensitivity is not matter, it can become like matter. So you find that certain people, when they grow old, become set and rigid in their minds. And you cannot shape them, make any impression on them. A person can become so hard-hearted that no appeal is possible to any instinct of fineness in him. And you also, that is, the nature of man has become like that of a stone. And you find that it is also possible for a man to become so extremely vague in his thinking, in his ideas, that nothing is clear or definite. It is all so much like smoke in the air. The ideas become so diffuse that you cannot even make a drawing or a picture of those ideas. And as I said, a person's nature can become sticky like mud. The person can boil over like a mud volcano. All kinds of changes happen in him. But the curious thing is that all these different changes bring him into conditions which are similar to conditions of matter that we can find. In other words, the consciousness with which he understands, knows, loves other people has quite a different nature from that of matter, but it has a quality of becoming so molded, so set, that it can become like matter of different sorts. And that is what causes the deterioration. That which is fine becomes gross. That which is full of movement and fluidic becomes set and stagnant. And similar changes take place in one's nature. But all these changes take place only when we do not notice them, when we are not aware of how we are changing from day to day. But if a person, while he is quite young, is careful to live his life with a certain understanding of his own motives, actions, and so forth, then I think that to a great extent he can prevent this change for the worse, which takes place in most people from day to day. There is the possibility of retaining the youthful enthusiasm, idealism, sensitivity, the love of freedom, and various other qualities which characterize the period of youth. Of course, there are other attributes which characterize, which belong to the later seasons in one's life. Later on, a person may become more mature, more wise in various ways, and he may show other qualities appropriate to those later periods in life. But I feel that all the innocence of childhood, as well as the energy and enthusiasm, the freedom of youth, can be carried on throughout life. And the living of such a life would be something wonderful if one can manage it. Now, when we speak of theosophy, it really represents a certain understanding with regard to the nature of all things pertaining to our life, which is not superficial, but is deep. And the way to live theosophically is the most natural way of living. Sometimes people think that theosophy is a peculiar doctrine, and theosophists are those who have various ideas which other people do not share. But although such an idea may exist, yet I think that does not represent the truth of things. All people become changed in their nature through various influences with which they come into contact. So they acquire a certain nature which is different from what they originally possessed. But if we can retain that original nature of purity, of freshness, of sensitivity, of pliability, and various other qualities that characterize the early stages of life, then that is the most natural way of living. And I think that when we talk of living in accordance with nature, it should really mean living with a nature that has not become distorted, that has not become set, that has not become compromised through various influences to which it has become subject. A nature that retains its original purity. I think that if young people can maintain it to some extent, they will find that they understand the fundamental truths that have a deep bearing on one's life almost instinctively, without much explanation. If one is pure enough in mind and heart, then he will see what is true as true. He will feel it is true. Instinctively, he will know it is true. And various other ideas which are false, when they come up before him, he will reject them. He will know what are those ideas or truths which agree with his own pure nature. So there is the possibility of living one's life with such clarity of vision, a judgment which is always true. And also, as I said, with that freshness which belongs to us in our early life. And he is really the young person who is young at heart, not in body. In India, there are references to great spiritual beings who are perpetually young. That doesn't refer to physical immortality. It refers to their inner nature, which perhaps is reflected even in the physical body. So there is this idea that one can remain free from the corruption which the world brings into our nature, so that one can go through life entirely unspoiled. And that would be a wonderful way of living one's life. And I suppose that before a person comes to the condition of the great spiritual teachers of the world, he would be able, or he must be able, to live such a life which is beautiful from beginning to end, without any touch of vulgarity, any streak of that may be undesirable, free from resentment, greed, envy, hatred, and all that. It is only such a person who can be really said to be beautiful, beautiful of spirit, in heart and mind. And I think what I have said applies to the young people as well as to the older people, because these are matters with which all are concerned. It's not a question of the age of the body, but it's a question of the condition of mind and heart.